Thank you for tuning into a forum involving the candidates for the 34th District Assembly seat. I'm your moderator, Ken Kroll. Our gathering today has the two candidates appearing on the November ballot, incumbent Republican Rob Swearingen of Rhinelander and Democratic challenger Matthew Michelson of Lake Tomahawk. Rob Swearingen was first elected to the chamber in 2012 and is running for the 34th District seat of the Wisconsin State Assembly. And Matt Michelson, this is your first run for this seat. Joining me today is our media panel who will question the candidates: Stephanie Haynes from WJFW, Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, Eileen Persick from StarJournalNow.com in Rhinelander, Brian Jopek from the Lakeland Times, and Glenn Moberg from Wisconsin Public Radio's Wausau Bureau. The 34th District Assembly seat covers all or portions of Oneida, Florence, Forest, and Vilas counties. Our format today will have each candidate presenting an opening statement, followed by questions from the media panel and a closing statement. Each candidate will be given a chance to respond to each question, and I'm going to allow some flexibility during short rebuttals. So let's have our first opening statement, and we'll start with Rob Swearingen.
Well, thank you. First, I'd like to thank Ken and the panel here and everybody here at WXPR for hosting this discussion one more time. It's great to be here. I look forward to discussing the strides the state legislature has taken in Madison to benefit citizens of Wisconsin and the people of the Northwoods. As many of you know, I was born and raised in the Northwoods, graduated here, got married here, and raised two daughters right here in Rhinelander. My wife Amy and I are small business owners with over 25 years of experience in our community. I'm also very proud of my two daughters, Jenny and Jessie, who were educated in the Rhinelander School District and now both attend Nicolet College. During my first two terms in the Wisconsin State Assembly, I have served as the chairman of the Speaker's Task Force on Rural Schools and currently serve as the chairman of the State Affairs and Government Operations Committee. Additionally, I served as a legislative member on the Environment and Forestry Committee, the Tourism Committee, as well as the Transportation Committee. Lastly, I was honored to be appointed to the Wisconsin State Building Commission and the chair of the Higher Ed Subcommittee of the Building Commission. And with that, I appreciate once again the invitation.
Okay, Matt.
Well, I want to thank you all for inviting me to share why I am running. I also want to thank WXPR for this opportunity and Mr. Swearingen for being here. I am Matt Michelson. I am a school teacher at Lakeland Union High School, currently teaching social studies and coaching girls basketball. I'm born and raised in Lake Tomahawk, currently hold the seat of town supervisor there in my first term. I also want to thank those that voted for me within the primary. I'm going to need many more votes come November 8th, and I look forward to getting those. I want to thank my colleagues at Lakeland Union High School for working with them. I want to thank the people that I've met going door to door, thousands upon thousands of people throughout this endeavor, throughout this journey. And I want to thank my friends and my family for pushing me and guiding me in this endeavor and believing in me. Also, I'd like to thank my students that make me come to school each and every day, and being blessed with the job that I have and being back in my community that I call home for the last 27 years of my life, to give them the opportunity of an education. I want to thank them. I want to thank you. I'm doing this because I want to end the divisiveness between political parties. I am on the Democratic ticket, but have views on both sides of the plate. I want to empower our kids, empower our parents. I want to champion education. I want to invest large sum amounts within broadband. And I'd like to get down to Madison and actually work for Northern Wisconsin, the common salt of the earth people of Northern Wisconsin again.
Okay, our first questioner tonight will be from Brian Jopek to Rob Swearingen.
All right, Mr. Swearingen, would you support a state version of the Rhines Act, which would require affirmative action by the legislature to enact a major regulation?
So the Rhines Act actually came through my committee this last session. I fully expect it to come back again in the next upcoming session. It was authored by Representative Adam Nalon. And we actually did have a hold up on it after the initial hearing on it. It did pass out of the state assembly, and I believe it died in the state senate. So the answer is yes. I think that it'll come back, and whether or not it has additional changes remains to be seen. I think it's an important regulatory issue in the state of Wisconsin. So The answer is yes, depending on which form it comes back in, but I was pretty comfortable with the one that passed out of the Assembly this last session.
Matthew?
If elected, I'll have to explore this a little bit more, and I'm open to voting, whether it be Republican or Democrat, within the RAINS Act, and if it did come out of the Assembly but failed within the Senate, that is something I'll have to explore and look into as we go forward.
Anything else? Rob, is that tough?
No. Once again, I know that Representative Nailon worked very diligently on that issue, and when one of the other stakeholders had some heartburn with it, we pulled it off the calendar for about a week, fixed those two couple of tweaks for that for those individuals, and then it went back on the Assembly calendar and ultimately passed the floor.
Okay. One more time, Matt. Do you have anything else to say?
No comment.
Okay. Next question will go to Stephanie Haynes from Newswatch 12. Matt Michelson.
On the issues of our schools here in the Northwoods, what solutions or steps do you have to ensure that those schools have the money to operate and provide competent education for our kids? And does our school funding formula work, or is it broken? What specific steps would you take to fix it if it is broken?
Well, thank you for that question, and that is the number one priority why I am running, to stand up for our education system in the Northwoods and our students and our parents and our educators. I believe that the school funding formula currently does not work. We do not get any equalization aid for our schools up here due to the property-rich tax of the Northwoods. We have gotten some sparsity and categorical aid, but not at the numbers that we need. Lakeland Union High School is state-funded for transportation at 60%, putting a burden of that 40% on the local property tax owners and payers. Also, special ed needs are increasing tenfold. I know at Lakeland Union High School, one in four students in the next 5 years will most likely have an IEP, and there's a need within the autism spectrum as well. The state has come out and said that in the past they would fund special education categorical aid at two-thirds. We get 26 cents back on the dollar, which I don't think is acceptable. Other than that, rural schools are losing when it comes to the funding formula, and I know that we have lost some of the enrollment and population, so we also have to look through economic benefits to get young professionals back in our area, young families back in the area, and getting the rural schools of the Northwoods flourishing again. With that, I'm not always a proponent of throwing money at an issue and coming up with a solution. We need to move the money around a little bit more, but also I'd like to explore removing some of the red tape of educator effectiveness that does not do anything to benefit student learning either. Thank you.
Rob?
So the rural schools issue is something that I initially, when I went to Madison 4 years ago, I'm in the hospitality business. And one of the first things that was up against was actually the Ryaner School District with the divisive referendums that were going on within the city. And so at that time, I got together with State Representative Mary Chaya from the Tomahawk District, and we brought down people from Rhinelander, the superintendent, Kelly Jacoby, the president of the school board, Ron Counter, some the numbers cruncher, Marta, and we went through a worldwide tour of the Capitol and met with many people. Fast forward to the Rural Schools Task Force, which was formed out of that very same meeting, that ultimately some of those end ideas made it into the state budget cycle last session. The answer is the school funding formula does work overwhelmingly for the majority of the state of Wisconsin, just not necessarily where we are up here, especially in Rhinelander. Rhinelander is probably the most frustrating school district that I'm up against in everything we've done. If we had a pile of money to make everybody whole, I think we could change the school funding formula. But that being said, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, the rub is that no legislator is going to take money from one from their district and shuffle it around out of the district, essentially up north. So we have to rely on categorical aids.
Like my opponent just indicated, high-cost transportation is one of those categorical aids. So the Lakeland Union School District received $214,000 off the price of what they're doing for transportation. That's a huge amount of money. Northland Pines received money. Phelps and received money in Florence. And all that helps, but it doesn't, you know, unfortunately, that transportation money is money we should be using to educate kids. And that's the big frustration we have up here. So does it work up here? No. It works for mostly the state as a whole. But to change it would be a pretty tall order. That being said, I am open to looking at the school funding formula every chance I get and continue to work with the Fiscal Bureau and DPI to make things better for rural schools.
Matt?
Over my opponent's time within the legislature, he has voted to divert public tax dollars, public funds that should go to public schools for unaccountable voucher schools, and it goes down to the southeastern part of the state. With the attack on education that has happened over the last 4 to 6 years, there's been a large teacher shortage. 2,800 teachers within their first 5 years have even left the state or are not teaching anymore. There needs to be a constitutionality reform to it that attaches a certain number to each student so it is equitable within the state. One other thing, there will be 69 referendums on the ballot this November 8th, which I think is really wrong, and education is losing within rural districts, especially the 34th.
Rob?
Nowhere did I ever say I liked school vouchers. What I will say is they're here to stay. And that being said, I think that we have to keep focusing on our categoricals to make sure that we get our fair shake. And that might be the only way we get is outside of the school funding formula. It's unfortunate my Democratic opponent here wants to stick to his Democratic talking points because we just put $200 million extra into education, into the child. So the fact is the state is actually spending more money on education this last cycle, even just up a tick. And that just came out from the Fiscal Bureau about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Next question will be from Glenn Moberg from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Let's stay on education. The UW system has had to manage $250 million in cuts during the last budget cycle. Those who voted for the cuts argued that tough choices had to be made to address the $3.6 billion deficit that came out of the Great Recession. But critics argue that the cuts created an unprecedented exodus of faculty and staff from the 26 colleges and universities of the UW system. There's now a proposal to increase funding by just over $42 million. Do you favor that increase, and how do you feel about the cuts that have been made?
Rob Swearingen.
Well, thank you, Glenn. Actually, I was just with the president of the UW system just the other day at Rylander High School. Ray Cross came to visit. We took a tour of Rylander, which was fantastic for me, first of all, to spend some time with him, and second of all, for him to spend some time in the Rylander High School. The $42 million that he's requested is something that we'll be looking at, certainly as soon as the state budget gets released sometime in February. The $250 million cut, keep in mind, was less than it originally started at. I think the governor's cut was about $350 million, so we got back that $100 and the $250 remained. In addition to that, there was also, the CPA caucus in the state assembly discovered about $1 billion in kind of almost a slush fund in the UW system. And they were told to spend that money down. And so that remains to be kind of a frustrating issue. Now, Ray Cross has done a fantastic job at bridging the gap between the state assembly and the Senate and what goes on in the UW. And that needs to continue. And I think if we keep him on, if he stays on, I think he can bridge that gap and make some real positive things. In addition to that, don't forget the tuition freeze, which over the last 4 years saves a student about roughly $6,000. So that's been a good thing, and Ray Cross supports that freeze. Whether or not we get another freeze coming up in this next session remains to be seen. But I think all this is good, not to mention the flagship of the University of Wisconsin is Madison. And you will see the research continue in Madison. You will see them get the same reputation they've always had. Nothing has really changed in the UW system, especially Madison. And that cut was spread out through the whole system, not just Madison, just to be clear. So we'll take a look at the next state budget when we get it.
Matt?
Thank you for that question. And the UW system of our colleges are one of the best in the nation, if not the world. I am a proponent of not cutting any extra money and putting more than $42 million back into that budget. However, my opponent did mention the rainy day fund that UW-Madison does have of $1.2 billion. I think we need to fund the UW systems even more than the $42 million that is within this next budget. But we need to look to fund more of the rural UW schools outside of just UW-Madison. Our UW schools are an investment in our communities. They are for our young, youthful workforce, and we need to keep them number one within the nation, number one within the world. Another thing I'd like to look into is to enhance technical college support and to make that more affordable, if not free, for two-year colleges as our economy is changing and many, many students are looking to get a technical hands-on trade degree for their future. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Rob, anything else?
I would just add that we asked President Ray Cross the other day what the enrollment was of the UW system. And they're down about 2,700 students right now. And that's directly because of the fluctuating population in the state of Wisconsin and who's graduating. So hopefully that goes up a little bit more, but I think the projection is that things are going to either level off or actually drop a little bit in the next several years.
One more time, Matt.
And one other thing I'd like to add is we need to put oversight on this funding too, so it doesn't go into administrative clout. We need to look to enhance the college experience for the student. And the tuition freeze is very good, but we should fund that freeze as more and more students going to these UW systems are having to graduate in 5 or 6 years. And I think college should be, you should get out in 4 years and not be burdened by so much debt, which there's $19 billion in student loan, or 19 million individuals within Wisconsin that has student loan debt that burdens them and impacts the economies, especially of the UW system, college towns, and rural Wisconsin.
Next question comes from Eileen for Matt Michelson.
Matt, what do you see as the key issues that will affect this assembly district over the next few years, and what are your ideas to tackle them?
Well, we have an aging population, and many young professionals are not coming back as there's a large brain drain. We need to look for workforce development, and we do that by partnering businesses with high schools and technical schools. We should look to the school district of Oliva Strum. They have a manufacturing, basically a plant within their high school that students get hands-on training from. I've spoke to many superintendents, especially Mr. Newhouse in Florence County, and he would like to see that come there so many students could learn that trade and bring that back to the rural districts. My opponent ran on tourism and jobs in 2012. I don't know where the jobs are. Tourism has increased, but it is only increased 2.5% to 4%, and that is the lowest growth in the entire state of Wisconsin. We have a tourist-style economy. I want to support the businesses, the restaurants, the resorts, the taverns. I'm also a proponent of allowing more property rights for the individual to rent out their home per week. That way it would increase more room tax. It could go back into the tourism fund. We could get tourism to the likes of the 1950s when President Eisenhower actually came up here and toured. Outside of that, we need good professional, good paying jobs back in our area, and those just aren't here.
Rob?
So I also served on the Youth Workforce Readiness Task Force. That's a mouthful to say. This last session too, and we toured tech colleges and also the Oliva Strum School District where Cardinal Manufacturing is there. It's really, really, really quite something. If you haven't checked it out, you should find it on YouTube or on the net, Cardinal Manufacturing. They do a great job. It's kind of like a fab lab on steroids is what it is. That being said, we certainly need to keep our youth in the district. So we want them to graduate. We want them to find a job locally. We want them to make sure the job is family sustaining so that they can raise their family here and hopefully their kids can enter the workforce here as well. In terms of tourism, that has been a major challenge, even at my restaurant, trying to keep help has been a frustration for the last 1 to 2 years for sure. Further north, they're having a major challenge up there with seasonal workers for tourism industry. One of the things I was talking to Secretary Stephanie Klett from the Department of Tourism just last week, and we talked about one of the major problems up there, up north, as far as tourism is concerned, is actually finding temporary housing for these seasonal employees to come in. So unfortunately, or fortunately, some of these businesses now have made the decision to convert properties into either dorm rooms or some sort of apartment situation where they can actually house these people that come up here for the season. We're working very closely with the Department of Workforce Development on their job search website, because the goal there is to make sure that we put seasonal workers that are looking for a job in touch with employers that need the help. And so I think that helps, but it doesn't solve the situation. I was talking to President Cross again just the other day. He's talking about potentially getting some AP courses within the high school, so we can make the first year of college actually come out of the high school. So if it's a calculus course or something along those lines, they could use actually their high school senior year as the first year of college, which would bring them down to 3 years for college. So hopefully that would help the workforce as well. I mentioned Fab Labs earlier. I'm proud to say that the 34th Assembly District has the most Fab Labs in any district in the state of Wisconsin. So starting with Three Lakes, Florence, Rhinelander, we were just touring that last week, and Northland Pines will be opening up. So hopefully we get those kids trained. We know they're not all going to four-year college. We want them to stay here in the Northwoods.
One rebuttal, Matt, if there's anything else you want to add.
Well, I've been meeting tons and tons of people over this endeavor, and the number one thing that I hear is so many hardworking families have a very tough time paying the bills. And I know young professionals, they are attracted to more of a social being and the urban cities. We need to make Northern Wisconsin, the 34th district, attractable to young professionals again, and get them in the healthcare system, get them in the education system, get low interest entrepreneur type loans there for them, for confidence back in the economy and for them to take risks, so the 34th district can actually be increasing in some population instead of decreasing. And we need to look to, I think, Eau Claire and River Falls, which is the largest growth in the state right now.
Anything else, Rob?
Yeah, I would just add that within the 34th Assembly District, or certainly the 12th Senate District, we have lost population. And so each county is a little bit different in terms of Florence may have lost it because we can't get and harvest the timber in the forest. What goes on in Oneida and Vilas may not be quite be the same. Unfortunately, we have lost some of that population. So if we can get people to move back up into the area, and broadband is one of the best examples of what we need to get that people up, those people up here and new businesses.
Brian Jopek?
If I may, can I just respond quickly?
10 seconds.
Okay, with broadband, we need to look to Minnesota and actually ask for $40 million for rural initiatives and not turn away $23.5 million of the CAF fund that Governor Walker did. $1.5 million in grants is a little bit okay, but it doesn't help our students. It doesn't help our workforce.
Rob, anything?
My opponent's out of touch. The initial money that was turned down, I wasn't around when that happened, but it was designed for the Badger Converge Network and hooking up libraries and schools, all of which have been done.
Okay, now Brian, go ahead.
Mr. Michelson, would you support a bill, this is a legislative question, a legislature question, to put the legislature under the records mention law?
I would support a bill to put them under that law. If I am hearing you right and believe anything that is under the table or deleted does not go under the open records law at this time. Speaking with your counterparts at the Lakeland Times, I am for more transparent government and open records, and I believe that everybody should be held accountable, especially those that serve the public within the legislature. So I would support that bill.
Rob?
So first of all, I don't support any bill I don't see. So I would certainly take a look at that bill. But here's my problem. And it has to do with privacy, Brian. So if Ken, God forbid, you would email in my office and admit to me that you have a relative, son or a daughter that is on a heroin, that is now an open record into my office. and that record is now requestable. I just don't know if that's proper or if that's right, that somebody should be able to get information on your loved one, an issue that you felt open enough to talk to me about. So that's one of my issues with the open records request stuff. If you want to know who's having donuts in the office next door, or who's who just celebrating a birthday, and those emails go through the Capitol on a daily basis, I got to be honest, I delete those. But anything of importance is typically kept around. In addition to that, if I'm working on a bill, there are several versions of a bill, start to finish, and sometimes we make some pretty novice or foolish mistakes on a bill that initially come out, and actually the initial draft of a bill is just a bunch of ideas until you get it whittled down to the final version. So if all that is open records requestable, instead of just the end result, the bill itself, it's just the process. Some of that stuff really it wasn't going anywhere in the first place. So I understand where you're coming from with the question. I'd like to see the bill for sure. But the privacy issue to me is probably the biggest concern.
Brief rebuttal.
I too would like to read the bill first, and if I am lucky enough to be elected on November 8th, I will read every bill. I will write legislation. I will co-sponsor legislation. However, if it is something of that private nature, I don't believe it should be through the aspect of email. Maybe it should be a phone call or a face-to-face conversation. So I am all for transparent government, as people need to be held accountable.
Okay, let's go to the next question. It'll be Stephanie. You ask Rob Swearingen.
On the issue of broadband that we've been talking about, what specific steps do you have in mind to bring more reliable internet access to the Northwoods or places that don't have it?
So I am fortunate enough to be on the Broadband Advisory Committee through the PSC. And we have come leaps and bounds in 4 years in the 34th Assembly District in terms of broadband. This Assembly District has gotten the most PSC grants of any Assembly District in the state of Wisconsin. And it's totaling close to $1 million. That's I'm pretty proud of that. Most of that money is in the Vilas County area. Vilas County has got a very, very active broadband coalition or economic development corporation, as well as Oneida County too. So we had initially had set aside $500,000. The governor has tripled that to $1.5 million. We just, in what we call the rural initiative, we are requesting an additional $10 million. That we started that just before the end of the last session, so we didn't have time kind of ran out before we got a chance to plug more into it. So if you add what the state is doing, coupled with the CAF funding from the federal government that is going out to the providers, we've got some great public-private partnerships. You saw a story yesterday on Channel 12 regarding broadband coming potentially in the Hazelhurst area, which is the perfect example of what's going on. Companies like Northwoods Connect, this is how it should be working. So broadband has come a long way, but people ask me, I've had a person ask me, is my glass half empty and half full? The glass is still half empty because we've got a long way to go. And unfortunately, the state of Wisconsin itself is actually lagging behind the nation in terms of download speeds. And so that's something that the governor is committed to, that's something that I'm committed to, that we need. Broadband is probably number one, the biggest need, because we know it affects rural schools. We know it affects the economy. We know it affects entrepreneurship and businesses in the Northwoods. The further north, we want to get them up here. So broadband is probably the number one reason that we can get them here. Interesting to note, like Northland Pines School District now has wireless hotspot antennas on the school buses, because the kids have their Chromebooks in Pines, but you go 5 miles from that school, and some of them, ever heard the term dial-up yet anymore? Some of them are still on dial-up. And so we want to give them these Chromebooks, but that doesn't do us much good if they can't connect at home to do their homework. So broadband is still number one.
Matt?
Broadband initiatives aren't partisan. They are needed within the entire state and especially within the 34th District of the Assembly. Speaking to people, tourists, and those that live here, and the study that has been done, $67 a day by each tourist is spent. And so many have said, we will stay here longer. We will move up here. We will work from our cabin. That would do so many great things for our economy. I've also had people and colleagues and their colleagues' sons or daughters or family that say, Mom, Dad, we'd love to come back up here. We can't work mobily up there. And the economy's changing, and we absolutely need to ask for more money within the broadband initiatives and instill that, because like my opponent said, the glass is still half empty. And over the last 4 to 6 years, if that hasn't been accomplished yet, then I don't think it's going to be accomplished again in this next legislature unless there's change within this district. One other thing, I see it each and every day. I have notes on my desk. I have kids coming up to me, and sometimes they're almost in tears. They don't have internet. They can't do their homework. They don't have accessibility to it, whether they live too far out of town, whether they can't afford it. Our schools are hurting. There's technological difficulties within our schools. And my opponent is right when he says the number one priority is broadband. But we should get this taken care of and taken care of within the next legislative budget. And that is one of my top priorities.
Nothing to add. Just anecdotally, I remember seeing a tweet come through. It has to do more with the cell phones. When the Hodei Country Festival was in town this this summer, I saw some guy said, "All you country festival, thanks for coming, but now it's time to go home and get off my cell tower."
Interesting. Well, let's move on. Next question will be from Glenn Moberg.
Should counties and local governments have control over zoning issues affecting our lakes, or should shoreland zoning policies be set in Madison? Critics argue that county governments have gone too far in some of those restrictions, to the point that they infringe on the legitimate rights of homeowners. But some county officials say they're frustrated that they can't take actions that they feel are necessary to protect our lakes, which are arguably our most precious natural resources. And isn't the idea of government closest to the people an inherently conservative idea? We'll start with you, Matt.
That's a tremendous question and one of the most debatable issues within this election. All government should be local, and I've learned that as a town supervisor for the great town of Lake Tomahawk. I believe the number one resource outside of our constituents is our water up here. It is what make people live up here. It's what make people come up here and visit, and I think we need to reinstill and restore those shoreland zoning initiatives within the local municipalities. I don't like to use the word of local control. I think it's more of local watch over. And these lake qualification systems put in place by the local municipalities were for the benefit of our groundwater, for the benefit of our fisheries. And it goes back to transparent government, too. Within the last legislature in 2015, they threw in about 108 different bills taking away that oversight. It has always been a conservative point of view. And my opponent and also Mr. Tiffany may argue that we are actually putting more local control in with giving more rights to the property owners. You know, there's a property bundle right that these property owners have to uphold. And it shouldn't be forced through under the table just to let some millionaires put boathouses closer to the lakes. So I am for restoring local control, local oversight, and maybe not to the effect of NR 115, but coming up with a compromise on both sides. And with saying that, I think we need to fund our DNR a little bit better too, so our wildlife, our fisheries, our resources, and our water are science-based, taken care of, and promote more education to the communities.
Okay. Rob?
So I know this is a local control has been kind of a buzzword up here for sure. And, you know, I have to admit, especially in terms of shoreline zoning, it wasn't quite the hot button issue in my office as it was in other places apparently in the county, especially Vilas County and here in Oneida County. So we certainly had a few phone calls and emails on it, but it wasn't quite as crazy. What I did find is there are a lot of people that really appreciated what happened with the shoreline zoning issue. As I recall, Senator Tiffany, and I'm not defending what he did, but he went through the proper channels, the proper motions, had the hearing with the DNR, and they came to an agreement. Unfortunately, when it came down to implementing that agreement, the DNR flipped on him, and he had went to a different alternative method in terms of the state budget to get back to the original deal. Local control, I believe, shouldn't be a one-size-fits-all label. I've authored bills that helps local control. We've got several of them in the Wisconsin State Assembly that went through. I did a bill for a lake association in Conover, which allowed more locals to get on their lake board, where it clearly hadn't been in previous. So that is an issue of local control. Rhinelander itself has got the premier resort area tax that's coming in January 1. We allowed them to do that. We changed that portion in the budget for them as well. So I find that local control works well for some in terms of when it's convenient to use the term local control, but I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all term. So in terms of shoreline zoning, whether or not that comes back again, we'll see. I know that Representative Adam Jarko was the lead offer in the assembly on that issue. He's an attorney, and he went through some of these identical cases with boathouses and structures that they couldn't be repaired because of what was going on with shoreline zoning issues. So we'll see how that shakes out in the next cycle. But at this point, there are a lot of people that really appreciate what happened.
Matt?
Well, over this time, meeting so many people, talking to the people, that does seem to be a hot button issue because, like I've said, water is such an important resource, and I think water is the water today is the oil of the 1970s. Last night, received a phone call from a gentleman over in the town of Stella. There's going to be a development, 14 houses on lake, 14 houses off the lake, on a 30-acre little pond. That is direct effect to what the legislature has done with taking away this control from the municipalities, stripping it away. And Madison doesn't own the Northwoods. Our people own the Northwoods and our resources. And I look to fight for restoring the oversight for our municipalities.
One rebuttal, Rob.
All I can say is I enjoy all the Northwoods has to offer as well, whether it's the clean air and the water. And the outdoors. And so I'm certainly not down there to harm Wisconsin's natural resources in any way.
Brian, I guess you're the next one. You're going to be leaving us, I think, fairly soon. So we'll let you have your last question.
I was wondering, Mr. Swearingen, do you support curbing public access to CCAP?
So the CCAP bill came up, I think, a session or two ago. I think it was authored by Representative Mary Chaya at the time. CCAP is the public access. If you want to find out if you are, if I'm going to hire somebody, for instance, you can log on to the state's website and check and see past history. There was an effort to potentially close that portal and charge you for that information. And then, as I also understand it, you could still go to the courthouse and get it for nothing also. Some of the concerns we have with CCAP is that sometimes the information on there isn't always up to date. So if you're convicted of something and or rather arrested for something and not convicted of it, that might may or may not still be on CCAP, and that's been one of the frustrations. Some argue that as an employer, I could subscribe to CCAP as part of a business expense, or if I was going to do it on a one-time shot, depending on how they develop it. Here again, I'd have to take a look at a new bill, a new version of a bill. I wouldn't be surprised if that comes back again this next session, although I have not seen it, but I know that discussion goes on.
Matt?
Well, I'm undecided on this as of now. I would have to read into it. I'd have to speak with my colleagues down in Madison. I did share with Richard Moore and Greg Walker that I would most likely be for keeping the CCAP as it is transparent government. However, just the other day, a couple people came to me and said, you know, there's so many people that can't get jobs based off of just what employers see on the CCAP. And my opponent is correct there when something might not be totally detailed or it might have happened in the past and these employees may have changed. So it will definitely come up again. I don't know if I'd support it or not support it yet. However, I am for open, transparent government, but people do need jobs too, and a mistake that they made in the past, if that doesn't allow them to get that job, I don't know. I don't think that's right.
Okay, we'll move on. Again, you're listening to a forum from the candidates for the 34th State Assembly District here on WXPR. Our next question will go to Matt Michelson from Stephanie Haynes.
What improvements to the Wisconsin transportation system do you support?
Well, currently we have the third worst roads within our state. I would explore possibly a manufacturer's trailer tax. I would explore licensing of trailers, and I would definitely support what the towns and town association have called for $5,000 per mile of state aid for local roads, because the current administration has come out and said we will give $8.9 million to local road aid, which is only an $88 increase, which figures show that that 1 mile of stretch of road could only be redone or repaved every 109 years. That's not sustainable. We absolutely need to fund our transportation. We need to put more of that aid in local roads, because 55% of all the roads within the state are of local townships. With saying that, I don't know if I'm for a increase of gas tax, as it could be regressive, and we do have the 10th highest within the state at this time at 31.9 cents, but possibly look to that. Also on the tables right now is repealing the minimum markup of gas, and if that is repealed, then possibly putting more of a gas tax in. But transportation definitely needs to be solved, and that should be a compromise between both Republicans and Democrats.
Rob?
So transportation is, I'll just call it $1 billion. We have almost $1 billion shortfall in the transportation. The governor has proposed putting another $500 million on the state credit card. I am not in favor of any additional bonding. There may be some in the end, who knows, but $500 million is still a pretty good chunk of change to be having our kids and grandkids keep paying that bill. It was frustrating the last cycle that we kicked this can down the road. It should have been fixed or certainly much more closer addressed then. I think all options should be on the table. So whether it is a gas tax increase of a nickel, whether it is licensing trailers, whether it is registration fee increases, we know that tolling is an option that everybody kind of supports. But in all reality, tolling, we need a waiver from the federal government to get that done. And even if we did get that done, it would be several years down the road before we could implement tolling. And none of those answers alone are going to fix the shortfall of $1 billion. So it's going to have to be a combination of many. I don't have the definitive answer on what's going to happen with transportation, but I can tell you clearly it has to be addressed and quick, because the billion will go up higher than that if we don't address it sooner. So once again, I'm not for bonding. And so I think all options should be on the table. We're also fortunate up in the 34th Assembly District that we did get some good DOT projects. So we're getting, at this point, a pretty good share of our money. We got the Highway 51 in Minocqua done. We got the Hazelhurst project done, or working on it. The Bearskin Trail Bridge, obviously, is all part of those DOT things. So my biggest fear is if they do cut more transportation, that the 34th Assembly District or the Northwoods would suffer, and we can't let that happen. So I want to make sure that if they prioritize what's going on within the DOT, and by the way, we're waiting for an audit, too, of the DOT. Once that comes, we'll see where they might be using monies in the wrong spots, or where there might be some inefficiencies, and we'll take a look at that. But we ought to make sure that we still get our fair share of the DOT funding in terms of project up here in the North, because if that doesn't happen, then we can't let that happen.
Matt, a rebuttal?
This $1 billion shortfall is a direct example of the ALEC-based legislation and Republican agenda over the last 4 to 6 years. Budgets should not just be for special interests. Budgets should be to maintain and sustain a lifestyle for the now and the future of our generation. And I agree with Mr. Swearingen when he says he's not for bonding, and that is very good, because we cannot put that excess tax and kick the can down the road any further. With that, when we improve our roads, we improve the skeletal system of our society. That will increase tourism, that will increase jobs, and it should be a number one priority outside of just broadband. I think just rural infrastructure, whether it be broadband or pavement of roads,
should be a top priority.
Anything else, Rob?
No, just the ALEC comment is kind of ridiculous. ALEC, for the listeners, is basically almost like a trade association that has a conservative think tank. They have bills that have been brought forward all across the nation, so it's legislation that you can use, model legislation. ALEC is not a boogeyman in the room, like my opponent would like everybody to think. Clearly transportation has to be addressed in this next upcoming budget, and I'm concerned about how it's going to happen moving forward in February.
Okay, Eileen has a question for Rob Swearingen.
Rob, I wanted to ask you about Wisconsin's Family Care Program, which is considered a model by many in the industry, but included in this current budget, it's going to be changed from allowing eligible people with disabilities and older adults the opportunity to make their own decisions regarding care, and would be instead managed by insurance companies, is my understanding. I'm thinking that you supported that legislation, or am I wrong?
So there was a lot going on in the last budget cycle with family care and senior care. And Wisconsin, in terms of senior care for sure, is the Cadillac model across the nation, and we can't let that go. So we did save senior care in the last budget cycle because our senior citizens depend on it. So we'll see what happens in the next budget cycle with senior care, and clearly Medicaid, education, and transportation are the three biggies in a $70 billion state budget. So we will be talking much more about because at this point the state is we're at a breaking point with how much Medicaid is costing or health care is costing. So we'll see how things progress as we move forward. But my main focus is still saving senior care.
Matt?
Over the next 30 years, the working age population, 18 to 64, is expected to increase by just 0.4%, while over the 65-year-old population is expected to double, and the over 85-year-old is expected to increase by 142%. And that is mostly within the 34th district. I believe that insurance companies should not manage. We need to get insurance companies out of the business of healthcare. I don't know how we're going to do that, but I'd like to explore an opportunity to do that. Some people have told me that based on the insurance companies maneuvering, they would not be prescribed certain medications. They would have to wait for life-saving cancer surgeries into the next year, so they would have to pay both deductibles. Obamacare has cost small businesses a ton of money. It has increased premiums, and that's directly to the lobbyists and the insurance companies, and it hurts our citizens, especially our senior citizens. I think the number one priority for our rural district up here with such an aging population is to support them in any way and not turn back Medicare and Medicaid funds from the federal government.
Rob, any rebuttal?
Yeah, I would just say I work very closely with the local ADRCs in the area, making sure that we have a great open-door relationship, especially here in the Rhineland one. I will also add that I'm going to really miss Secretary Kitty Rhodes. Her untimely passing with these DHS issues is really put a hole in state government. Also with Representative Dean Knutson retiring too, he was kind of our main champion in the assembly, and I used to look to him for a lot of advice, and he was a great resource. This is a thick subject, and hopefully we can take care of it in the best interest of everybody in the assembly district.
Glenn Moberg for Matt Michelson.
Let's talk about Wisconsin's energy future. Should we be investing more in renewable energy? Iowa now generates 31% of its energy with wind, but in Wisconsin, thanks to Walker administration restrictions, there have been virtually no new wind farms in the state in recent years. Scientists have linked coal-fired power plants and their emissions to climate change, which critics say could devastate our northern Wisconsin winter tourism business. They also say the emissions can lead to the acidification of our lakes, which could hurt summer tourism because it'll destroy the fish population in the lakes. So should we be doing more to promote clean energy, specifically solar and wind, and should we be looking at nuclear power as well?
Well, I am a proponent of renewable energy, and I think that if we invest in our infrastructure for solar power before all, that would drive down costs. It would help so many people with utilities. Wind power is something to look at. I don't know how feasible it is for the 34th District. I'm definitely anti-mining because it's just not feasible within our district, which my opponent has voted for within the legislature. I think we need to...
I guess the question is statewide. Should we look at easing up those restrictions on wind farms, which are keeping them from being developed in other parts of the state?
Well, yes, we should then ease off restrictions on that because renewable energy will benefit so many people of the North Woods and the whole state of Wisconsin. And if we look to our other states within the Midwest and they are improving upon that, then we should look to them to kind of copy that.
Okay. Rob?
So, Glenn, I'm going to admit this is not one of my wheelhouse questions. I got to be honest. I've worked real closely with Mike Kugas to chair the Utilities Committee in the Assembly. I've toured the Wisconsin Public Service Facility in Weston, which is fantastic. What they do, not see the amount of coal they put through that that plant. It's nothing short of amazing. Renewable resources up here, of course, would be the timber industry. As far as wind power in the 34th, here again, because we don't have a wind farm in this area, I'm not too overly familiar with that issue. However, I can tell you that if there's government red tape involved, that's one of the things that I'm in Madison to cut, is the red tape. So I assume, though, that one of the reasons that the state hasn't embraced any alternative energy plans is probably because of simply the cost. If it isn't going to be a cost savings versus what we're doing with coal, I imagine that's part of the issue. So I think that you know, that probably will become a topic as the next session rolls on, and I'm actually looking forward to learning more about it myself.
We have time for one quick question. Stephanie, you're next. Just one. Do you have a question that you would like to ask? No. Eileen, do you have another one?
Sure. Just throw it out there to anybody.
Anybody.
Okay. Just wondering what your whether you support or what your opinions are on paid maternity, paternity leave, that sort of a thing.
About 1 minute, Rob.
Well, that's one off the wall too. here again, I'll look at any piece of legislation that comes through. But I don't want the hardship also to be on the employer. You know, we talked about red tape earlier. Employers in this state get their fair share of red tape, and I know that there are efforts out there to give everybody a little more time off for whatever the issue may be, whether it's maternity or death in the family or just more vacation. But it's going to cost somebody something, and so that's something that we have to take a look at very carefully when a piece of legislation comes through. So I wish I could give you a better answer on that, but we'll see how things unfold after January.
Matt, about 1 minute.
Well, statistics show that with other countries granting more paid maternity leave, the relationship between the mother and the children is so much better off, and it improves their educational statistics and chance to grow. So I would, like my opponent said, have to read up on it first, have to explore it, have to sit down with the colleagues and do what's right for state of Wisconsin. My opponent is right. It would cost somebody extra. However, I think we should have measures that support the family life and more of a nuclear family, which could increase so many ills of our society as is today. And to promote more maternity leave within the workforce, I think would be a step in the right direction.
The hour has gone by quickly, and we're at the point of closing statements. So, Rob, you first.
Sure. Once again, I want to thank WXPR, Ken and Glenn, and Public Radio for hosting this this forum, and, of course, to our distinguished guests on the panel as well. But I'm proud of what my colleagues and I have accomplished this past legislative session and believe we are moving Wisconsin forward, in particular northern Wisconsin, in the right direction. We've respected the hardworking taxpayers of the state by lowering taxes and allowing them to keep more of their hard-earned money in their pockets. More and more people are employed than any other time in our state's history currently. And the unemployment rate is at 4.2%, its lowest it's been since 2001. We led the charge through our HOPE agenda to fight heroin and opioid epidemic affecting our state. We preserve senior care for 89,000 seniors who rely on it to pay for prescription drugs. I pushed for more broadband expansion to underserved areas and can proudly say that the 34th Assembly District has been the recipient of the most broadband expansion grants out of the district and the state. And lastly, we increased per pupil funding by $200 million over the biennium to help students in our schools. These are just a few of the many positive things that we have done and will continue to do in Madison to move forward, to move the Northwoods forward. It's been a privilege and an honor to serve as your state representative for the past 4 years. I believe that Northern Wisconsin is not only a beautiful place to vacation, but also to live, work, and raise a family. This is why I never left my hometown community of Rhinelander. Over my past two terms, Northern Wisconsin has made great strides and the reforms the state legislature has put forth are working. As a lifelong resident and small business owner, I understand what it means to sign the front of a paycheck, not just endorse the back. I ask for your vote on November 8th, and together we can continue to move the Northwoods forward. Thank you again for the invitation and allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Rob. And Matt Michelson.
I, too, would like to thank you for this opportunity. Thank you, WXPR. Thank you, Ms. Haynes from WJFW. You know, I got involved because there have been way too much division within our political system. And I want to bridge that gap. I want to stand up for the hardworking people of Northern Wisconsin. I want to stand up for the kids that don't see a future. I want to stand up for the education system that is being ripped away by certain agendas. My opponent, which I'm citing, Dan Meyer, has been handpicked in 2012. I'm giving the voters a choice. Whether you are Republican, whether you are Democrat, undecided, independent, voting for Mr. Trump, Ms. Clinton, I would vote for Matt Michelson. And this has been a wonderful endeavor. I have greatly learned. I will continue to learn. And I can't wait to be your state representative. I do want to also quote Alexander Hamilton. The people alone have an incontestable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to institute government and to reform and alter or totally change the same when their protection, safety, prosperity, and happiness require it. I think we are in a time right now in our history where we have to look ourselves in the mirror and say, how did we get here? And I believe leaders at all level need a change. I hope for your vote. I will work for the interest of the people of Northern Wisconsin and the 34th District. Thank you for your support, and I hope for your vote on November 8th. Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening to a candidates forum involving the candidates for the 34th Assembly seat, Republican Rob Swearingen and Democrat Matt Michelson. We also wish to thank Glenn Moberg from Wisconsin Public Radio in Wausau, Eileen Persick, editor of StarJournalNow.com, Stephanie Haynes from WJFW Newswatch 12, and Brian Jopek, before he had to leave, from the Lakeland Times Northwoods River News. Election Day is coming up, and we hope our time together here will help you make an informed decision. I'm your moderator, Ken Krall, and thank you.